It is Thursday, 11th of October. Welcome to episode 138 of Digital Outbox. Hello, and joining me tonight is Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Ian.
It's good to hear and see you online again.
Yes, good to be back, I must admit.
And young Christopher is not with us tonight, because as threatened last week, well, not threatened really, but he's got his car, so he's currently building a Caterham.
And it looks very good as well, doesn't it? As you watch him put the things together online on his Ustream channel.
Absolutely, you know. So ustream.tv/channel/cheesyuk. You too can watch basically Chris falling out with his dad every second night as they squabble over the technical the technical challenges that they face.
The wheels go on the axle. No, they don't. No.
I must admit, I think I've spent too many hours watching his feet.
It's better than Big Brother, let's put it that way. True reality TV.
And Chris is a big reality TV fan, so it's just quite ironic that he's now starring in his own little. I said little. I was going to try not to, but it's all good. It's all good.
A star in his own garage.
Absolutely. Let's crack on with some news. Facebook has now more than 1 billion users, allegedly.
Allegedly.
So this has been, I guess, it's been in the cards for a couple of years. When once it went past like 300 billion, 400 million, 500 million, everybody was like, right, the next interesting one's going to be a billion. And they've announced in the last week that they do have more than 1 billion people using it every month. So it's not just the fact that they've got 1 billion users. They reckon they've actually got people logging in and using it more than a billion across the planet.
Yes. Well, that's what they say. I must admit that when this news came out, I particularly enjoyed the Joy of Tech comic, which did a nice little spoof breakdown of Facebook's billion people. Which was, included the 167,785,962 accounts that Mark Zuckerberg created with bots from 2004 to yesterday. And it included a breakdown of the number of accounts at the accounts created for stalking exes, the number of accounts for pets on Facebook. And of course, the real people on Facebook was just a tiny fraction. But I did enjoy that. Check it out in the show notes if you want a bit of a giggle.
I particularly like the fake accounts used by workers to fool their boss.
It's great. Or fake accounts by teenagers to fool their parents.
Yes. But as usual with me, 1.13 trillion likes, 219 billion photos and 17 billion location check-ins. Phenomenal figures.
It is absolutely incredible, isn't it?
Boggle the mind.
Absolutely.
Boggle the mind. And what could potentially become more boggling in the UK is that Facebook is rumoured to be actually become an identity service for public services in the UK.
Is it just me that finds this a bit scary?
I'm just like, I read it and thought, is this The Onion? Is this... and then I looked and I was like, oh no, it's The Guardian. It's not even a Daily Fail. It's The Guardian that I've put this out there. So personal login details for social networking sites, bank accounts and personal mobile phone accounts could be used as official proof of identity to access public services. And the Cabinet Office has actually confirmed this. They plan to announce in the next few weeks some potential certified providers, and Facebook is one of them.
Yeah, Facebook and NatWest.
But who would you trust more?
Well, exactly. I don't know.
It's in some ways I can see why they're doing this, because everybody, and I'm saying everybody, what was the figure for UK? It's Well, it only had Europe. It was 30% of people in Europe have a Facebook account. So how many people have actually using Facebook, but don't really use maybe some of the public services, you know, websites from the government? Is this a, is this an easy way in to get people to use some of the services?
No, the government needs to make their services, you know, like half decent, so people want to use them. And for a lot of these things, do you really need to log in anyway? You know.
The main worry for me is the people that you hear about it a lot. Not so much. I must admit, I've not heard it so much for Facebook, but for Twitter, you know, that people's accounts being taken over.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's scary.
The thing is, you know, I really don't want my, if you flip this round, Facebook then going to get knowledge of my passport because I've signed into the passport service using my Facebook account? That's where it's actually the flip side of this, looking at it from the other point of view and how much information that Facebook get, that leaves me brings me out in a bit of a cold sweat, I must admit.
Now, let's just be clear, this scheme, this is following on from Labour's big idea around about let's have this big national ID card scheme, which was talked about and then kind of scrapped. What they're talking about with this one is that as a user, an individual can choose from a range of trusted non-government organisations to verify their identity. So the government won't centrally store personal data or ID card service, but they'll use things like Facebook and other trusted organizations to become that identity provider. So devil's in the detail, and I think we'll see probably in a couple of weeks' time what that brings for us.
Yeah, well, it is interesting because, you know, how does Facebook or these people at the moment verify that you are exactly who you say you are and you're not just somebody that's just made up one of these fake accounts? You know, we were joking about it just a couple of minutes ago, but be interesting to see how they manage to make that stick. Otherwise, you know, I'm gonna sign up for the government websites as Mickey Mouse, I think.
Hey. We have talked about trolls many a time on the podcast. And there was a troll jailed for 3 months just in the last week. So I think everybody in the UK knows about April Jones and what happened there. And this particular chap, Matthew Woods, who was drunk, and he made some comments on Facebook about the April Jones case and also Madeleine McCann. And I'm not going to go into what he said because I don't think it needs publicised. But he was arrested for his own safety because 50 people descended on his home and kind of threatened him. He pleaded guilty and he was jailed for 12 weeks. Now, and I guess, and there's a kind of, I can't make my mind up in these things. What's the difference between free speech and I'm drunk and I've made a mistake? And also I've put in the show notes some of the stuff that Frankie Boyle puts up. Is it any different to really what, you know, some of these guys are saying?
No, exactly. I think you make a good point. But I think that the things are moving in the way of people are just going to get just a little bit more careful about what you post online, you know. And actually, I don't think that's a particularly bad thing. You know, I think we should all be thinking about what we're posting and not just like there's enough inane nonsense that goes up on the internet, and actually if we actually thought about what we're leaving for prosperity for absolutely everybody to read, maybe society would be a bit better. Whether that extends to the fact that, you know, people should be jailed for what they put on Twitter and Facebook, well, you know, I think that's it's perhaps a bit excessive. I think what we need to think about is who is whether people are just being offended or whether there is something a bit more sinister to this. You know, do we really have a society where people are not able to be offended? Or and when does something that somebody's saying just is it just offensive, or is it actually dangerous, or something that as a society we should be saying, well, actually, that is unacceptable, and there are consequences for those kind of views. What do you think?
And I guess that's, I must admit, that's where I kind of tie myself in knots, because sometimes I think, you know, see if somebody is seeing something that is could cause problems, you know. And I guess we had the thing last year about, you know, where people try to incite a riot, and there was that whole, you know, we should be able to censor it, we should be able to, and people were jailed because of it. And I mean, people say offensive things all the time, you know, so where do you draw the line about, you know, what one person sees offensive as another person, you know, sees as fine? So why can I get jailed for some things and not others?
I think
it's a real grey area.
We should all just be nice to one another.
Oh, I wish. I must admit, I've been struggling on Twitter the last few weeks. I realise it's me. there's no getting away from it. But I find I'm really struggling with some people's real intolerance of like small things not working out for them, or like, you know, something really kind of like as minor happens and it's just the way they rant on. I'm like, no. And maybe it's just me, but I do think we've become a very intolerant society.
Well, I think we have. I think really what the government needs to come out and do is to be a bit like a parent and say to everybody in the UK, or in fact across the world, anybody online, and say, look, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
Yes. Hopefully David Cameron takes that advice, because he's joined Twitter.
Oh, and dear.
Well,
there's nothing like being ahead of the curve, is there?
And I remember,
there's nothing like being a trendsetter.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago he made that kind of quip about, you know, too many tweets makes one a twat. And I think if you start off in that position, I think it's just a slippery slope. He has joined Twitter. His first tweet was, I'm starting conference with this new Twitter feed about my role as Conservative leader. I promise there won't be too many tweets. And his couple of tweets so far have been very inoffensive. The at replies, however, were far from not being offensive. I guess being Tory leader and also leader of the country is thick-skinned. Boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy. It was a torrent of abuse.
But that's probably why he's now probably realising why it's taken him so long to get on Twitter.
Yeah. The trolls were out in force, put it that way. Moving on to slightly more kind of tech-related things. It's our Bash America section. Me and Henry have agreed, this is our new weekly feature. We're just going to bash the Yanks.
Yeah, what we really need is Bombdog to come up with a great jingle for this, you know, bash the Yanks.
And already I've got in my head Team America. So some,
you know,
sort
that's of, that was what was going through my head as well.
Some sort of riff on Team America, but one we can't get sued about that we can use regularly would be fantastic. I'm also kind of worried because this is the one word that over the last 3 weeks I've not been able to pronounce. So Hawaii or Hawaii.
And that's not those that's not that state of the US that's in the Pacific, is it?
I was waiting for you to make a 5-0 joke, but thankfully you didn't. Thankfully it's only me. So Hawaii,
oh gosh, we really should have practiced this, shouldn't we?
So Hawaii and ZTE pose security threat. These are two Chinese telecom firms, and I guess a lot of us probably haven't heard too much about them, but Hawaii, or Hawaii, depending on how you pronounce it, we have talked about them a couple of times because Everything Everywhere are using two of the devices as part of the 4G rollout in the UK, and BT have been using them for a few years as well. So basically this, it was an American investigation into them, and basically on Monday they came out and said that they are a risk to the US.
Yeah, they're such a big risk. It did take them 12 months to trump up, I mean, to discover all this evidence against them.
Yes, and this is basically, they believe there's links to the China's government and military, and because there's links with telecommunications, they believe they're a threat to national security, basically.
Yeah, now, I mean, I read this with, unlike you, Ian, I thought, oh, this is just, you know, the Yanks overreacting again, you know, it was like, good grief, you know, they can't They can't fight fair, so they've got to come up with some other nefarious means for trashing the opposition. And what better way than by saying, oh yes, they're a threat to national security. No self-respecting American would buy anything from these two firms. There's an article appeared in The Guardian yesterday. So actually, there may be more truth to this than I've given it credit for.
Exactly. I mean, the original article on the BBC site actually said that Hawaii had provided their source code to GCHQ, who had investigated it and passed it as safe. So I actually thought it was a bit of a, as you're saying, it was a bit of a kind of typical America. But last night, Malcolm Rickon has come out and said that that they are... So the Security Committee in the UK is actually taking great interest in this, and they have started an inquiry as well, which is probably going to be trouble for BT, because BT were the first company to kind of really go into partnership with them a few years ago. So it's...
Can I just say that actually they are doing some fantastic value devices as well.
Absolutely. And that's why they're so attractive.
If you want it's maybe not jelly bean, but an ice cream sandwich Android phone for about 60-70 quid. It's incredible.
Yep. And certainly their telecommunication devices have always been slightly cheaper and great specs, and I also get good reviews online.
Yeah.
Generally garnered good reviews, and that's why companies like, you know, EE and BT have been using them.
And I might also say pretty open firmware, so they're quite easy to root and get the latest firmware and stuff and download and things and hack about with to your heart's content.
Yes, so it'll be it's actually of great interest now where this goes and whether it'll affect things like, you know, BT's rollout of its broadband network and also EE, which is only now a couple of weeks away from launching here.
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
One story that you'd picked up on, Do Not Track. We've mentioned Do Not Track a few times, and this is now gone farcical, so I'll let you take us through this one.
I just thought this was, you know, just quite quite incredible, really, that basically what seems to have happened is the whole Do Not Track is trying to get hijacked by the by marketers, online marketers across the across the world, and you know, particularly in America, they said, well, actually we're not going to at all censure any of our members who might want to disrespect the Do Not Track thing, if you like, on a web browser in IE10. He says we don't really we don't think there's a problem with that at all. In actual fact, marketing should be a permitted activity. And I just like couldn't get my head around it. It's like this really is how can anybody think that this is acceptable? This is completely the opposite of the whole thing that Do Not Track is supposed to stop. People say, I don't want you to track me, you know, and yet the Direct Marketing Association and others are saying, oh yeah, well, actually, you know, you might say that you don't want to, but we think we've got some great offers which you might be interested in and you're going to miss out on if you say Do Not Track. So we'll just ignore the fact that you've said we don't want you to be tracked. Quite farcical, and
it just makes the whole thing for me pointless, you know, because it's if we're going to see the option built in and have all this kind of great, you know, I guess industry wide support for it, what is the point if we're going to have a list of exceptions including things like marketing? It just seems crazy.
Yeah, exactly, and you just wonder what really is the point.
I think that's the same for a lot of these big kind of initiatives and standards. It takes so long and it gets so watered down, it just all becomes a bit meh.
Yeah, you know, there's lots of stuff as well on this story that, you know, Roy Fielding is really, who's the Adobe chief technologist, and he's been kind of championing this, and then he's actually really almost lost the will to live with the whole kind of backlash against it from, you know, just vested interests. And you think, well, you've got some really good good people trying to thrash something out, and you know, at the end of the day, it's just not working.
I won't let that one go. Crazy Yanks.
Crazy.
Good old BBC. Good old BBC. They've launched iPlayer Radio.
Yeah. Did I was like, you know, they're like, yeah, the iPlayer already does radio, but we think we want another app that just does radio. I'm like, do I really need another app? You know, do I really? Can I not just click on the link at the top which says radio? Clearly not. Clearly there are a whole load of people who really just want the radio and would like, you know. Maybe I'm just getting old.
No, I think you're missing the biggest feature. The iOS app has an alarm. That was the.
Oh yes, yes. I can be woken up to my favorite radio station. Oh, that's good.
Fantastic. So I guess there's a number of facets to this. There's a kind of web app that brings together all the, and I don't know if this is part of the kind of cost cutting we're seeing as well. Instead of each of the stations having their kind of own branding and own technologies and own. It's like, let's just pull all of our content and put it in one place and we'll co-brand it. And that actually makes a bit of sense.
Yeah, let's just blur it all onto the one web page. And it's all there. Go and find it.
But the good thing is that in that one place, you're seeing all the live channels. You're seeing what's coming up. It's easy to see schedules. And also the kind of podcasty content and the listen again stuff is all in one place as well. It's actually better formatted than it was under iPlayer. So that was good. I think the other good thing is iOS app is actually very nicely done. It's actually got a couple of features that I've not really seen elsewhere. A really nice carousel feature, and you can almost like an old fashioned radio dial, but not done in that kind of style that Apple would be proud of. It was actually actually worked really nicely. As I said, it's got that fantastic alarm that as long as you leave the app running all the time, because it can't run in the background, you know, like, you know, thanks Steve Jobs. You know, like when everybody else is like thinking, oh, we've really missed it. You know, that guy's really, yeah. One app in the background. I couldn't just one bloody app in the background. Anyway. So yeah, if you leave it running and you leave it in night dimmed mode, then yes, you too can wake up at 10 to 6 in the morning
to the farming news.
Or whatever takes your fancy.
Yeah.
So well, yeah, and
I'm betraying my Radio 4 preferences, aren't I? 5:45 in the farming news, but there we go.
Yeah, not for me. Not for me. Android's coming soon. Don't worry. So it will get there. They're just that they've got lots of issues because they rely on things like Flash. So
savior of the universe.
Yeah, not really. I think it's a good move. I think it's a good move.
I'm sure it is. We're all for innovation and we're all for them spending the license fee wisely on good stuff like that.
The other thing,
I just don't see the point.
No, I can tell you're totally disinterested. There is actually another app that came out the week before called Radio Player, which had BBC support. It was UK radio in one place. So again, this is an app for iOS, and you launch it and you can have favourites. But it had BBC and also commercial stations. And what was interesting for me, it's actually a lot quicker at starting off the streams than TuneIn Radio, which has obviously radio stations from all around the world. But
it does, yeah.
That radio player was all the UK stations under one kind of brand. And it was a really nice app.
Yeah, what I like about TuneIn Radio, though, is that although you might have to wait a while, that it because it's buffering a bit more, it does actually, you tend not to have it stuttering, really, because it does keep quite a lot sitting there. And, of course, you can, you know, obviously record it all in the background and stuff like that.
No, that's true. I'd love to see I use Virgin and nothing stutters and buffers, but haha, you suck, Virgin. Amazon are on a tear. All their services are coming to the UK that they've had in America for ages. So the next one that's come out is the Kindle Lending Library.
Kindle Lending Library.
I'm really pleased I managed to say that without like going blah, blah.
I know, it really is one of those things that you really have to put your teeth in for, doesn't it?
Do you know much about Kindle Lending Library?
Well, I only that when it launched in the US, I was rather disappointed that it wasn't over here. And I did quite like this idea because there were a few. Lendl was a service which was making use
That's
of that,
right.
which
yes.
was which I signed up for. I was quite keen. And in actual fact, I thought it was actually quite a good idea, particularly something like Lendl, where you could only lend out books. You only got so many credits, and you got more credits as you bought more books. So you could only like borrow books that you once you kind of were lending as well. So you had to keep, and it probably stimulated sales of books actually rather than reduce them, which is a good thing for authors and publishers and everyone. I thought it was quite a good thing. And it's actually one of the things that's kind of. I've always found a bit disappointing about Kindle is the fact that, you know, you buy books, but I buy books and I'm happy to recommend them to other people if I think they're any good and lend them to them if they like them, and you know, if they like them, I'm sure they go and buy them, or if they're not that bothered, then they don't bother. But it's a thing about Kindle that you can't really do that. It's kind of locked in on your device, and
it's so, the one complaint that I don't know why, but people bring Apple and anything kind of digital to me as if like I am some sort of, you know, I am the reason it's at fault. And see, if anybody gets a problem with Apple at work, you know, I've got a problem with this Apple. It sucks, doesn't it? And you're just like, sod off and go to the Apple store. Stop giving me grief. And it's the same with, for some reason, digital books. Because people go, oh, and I don't read. So what are you talking to me? I don't read. But they'll come to me and say, you know, I do like my Kindle, or I do like reading on my iPad, but you can't lend books, and it really frustrates me. And I think that has been always the kind of, it's like an easy target. At the same time, I always sit there and think, yeah, but I know you downloaded a bloody torrent file with 200,000 books on it. You can't do that in the library, can you? So don't give me grief about lending. Anyway, we're straying off topic.
We are straying off topic, and that's going into my fault completely.
No, it's me for having. I just wanted to rant.
Rant.
Kindle Lending Library. And the interesting thing about this is a service for Amazon Prime members. So this allows you to borrow books from Kindle Owners Lending Library. There's 200,000 books currently available at the time of writing. However, most of them are from independent publishers, the kind of main, and also Harry Potter.
I didn't know Harry Potter was lending books.
Exactly. Well, now that he's got nothing to do, now that he's done the business, he's really just like, oh, I'll just lend my books. So yeah, this is a new service for Prime, and this was one of the things. If you looked at Prime in America, you had the kind of free video renting and the lending library and a whole lot of other things alongside the, you know, we'll deliver you stuff within a couple of days, you know, for free. So this is finally the launch of these kind of services here as well. I think it's another good service to have. I don't know that many people that use Prime in here in the UK.
Well, I have been a Prime user in the past, but actually it's getting quite expensive. If you're not, you really have to be doing a lot of kind of shopping on Amazon to make it kind of worth your while. And I've had a couple of epic fails with Amazon Prime as well. So, and all they do with that, of course, is just say, oh, we're terribly sorry, have another month free on us. So, you know, I had a 12-month subscription that lasted about 3 years, but
nice. All thanks to Home Delivery Network. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Or Yodel, given their proper name. So yeah, this will be out at the end of the month.
Yeah, so, that'd be good. Really, very good.
It's another good thing to see, because we always for Amazon, I think we are kind of constantly behind America. Because we didn't see the paper whites coming here. And I think the reason for that is they're sold out through till, I think, December. So they were only out a couple of days and they were basically sold out. So they've obviously not got enough produced to support a worldwide launch. And final story this week is webplatform.org. This is it's a new website that's been launched that is going to try and pull together all the kind of best references, tutorials, hints, tips, quirks, bugs, notes, etc. About HTML, specifically HTML5.
Does it deliver?
Kind of. It's got great aims. It's backed by Adobe, Apple, Facebook, Google, HP, Microsoft, Mozilla, Nokia, and Opera. So it's got the right people in there. So it's actually got cross-industry support. But they did put a note of caution. It's not there right now. It's basically got the wiki, the doc side, which anybody with an account can edit. It's got the kind of templates in place to ensure consistency, but it now needs the... And it's also got a good start because they've taken data from the kind of source companies and sucked it all together. It now needs the kind of rest of the community to start putting flesh on the bones and making it, you know, keeping it up to date and making it the place to visit. But I think it's definitely a good step forward. You know, if you can go to one place and get that kind of information, it can only be a good thing.
So how does it stack up with the likes of Stack Overflow, for instance, or even Google?
Google, to their credit, we're putting links up from the kind of development community, pointing the development community back to there. I don't think it's going to Stack Overflow. It's been running for so long, and also it's got that kind of question and trusted answer type thing. I think that's part of the problem. How, you know, if anybody with an account can go and edit it, what stops me and you vandalizing it? What stops me and you putting up, not deliberately vandalizing it, but just putting up the wrong answers? You know, it's going to need the kind of the guys in the know to keep that up to date. But it's been launched. It actually looks a really good environment. And I think we'll only know, you know, 6 months, 12 months from now if it's been successful.
We should take a diary note to revisit in 6 months' time. Whatever happened to...
Well, at this point, I should call out Siri and do the thing, but it would fail. I don't know. It's actually been not too bad. It's worth... Hold on. Let's go for this. Remind me to check webplatform.org in a year's time. That worked.
Okay. Very good.
Unbelievable.
There's nothing like
there
a live test.
There was that
biggest
pause of like, and I realised as well that I'll need to kind of cut out the dead time when I do the edit, and I'll just keep it in.
See, sequences may be shortened. Sequences may be shortened. This was the 10th time you tried to create that.
Nobody will believe me. Let's be honest. Anybody using an iPhone out there will believe me. Everybody that doesn't will be like, he just edited that, you cock. That didn't work. He's a Glaswegian. There's no way said it could work. That's our news for this week. I'm not quite sure.
Picks? Do you have any picks, Ian?
I do have a pick. I have one pick, Super Hexagon. It's a game for iOS, for iPhone and iPad. It's $1.99. It's classed as a minimal action game. Basically, there's hexagonal shapes and squares and lines come on the screen, and you just need to move left or right to avoid them. Sounds very simple. It is very hard, and it's fantastically addictive. It's got that pick up and play for 5-10 minutes, and then go... And then you will come back half an hour later and think, yeah, I can beat my time. It's got some nice kind of retro arcade type music as well. I love it. It's just very addictive. Buy it. It's really nice. It's been updated for the iPhone 5 as well. So
very good. Is that a universal app or is there an HD
version? Yes. No, it's universal.
Brilliant. I'll certainly check that out.
Yeah, it's well recommended. But as I said, the first few goes are just like, and then you get into it, and then there's a kind of like a sudden breakthrough, and then you go, wow, this is the best thing ever. So that's my pick. Have you got any? I'm not sure if you have.
No, not this week. No.
I'll cut that bit out then.
Just, I'm still basking in the awesomeness of my Raspberry Pi opening my garage door when I phone it up.
As I said, I so want to somehow hack this and just sit outside your house and get you to a window and watch the door opening and shutting constantly and think, what?
I had a nice little web page with the where you know you press a button and it opens the garage door, and I got the kids doing it, you know, and it was definitely one of those, you know, they're like, what happened? And I was like, well, you've just opened the garage door quick in case someone's going and nicking your bike, you know.
It's very good. The Raspberry Pi does look awesome. Have you put Xbox Media Center on it?
I did have a little play with that, but yes, I've now put it to other uses.
Good. Okay. So that's our podcast for this week. If you want to, one thing, I was going to jump in and say, if you want to find out more, a big thanks to Ro for pointing out there was a slight feed problem. So if you're using not the iTunes feed, but the feed off the site, it hadn't updated in 4 weeks.
Oh dear.
Bad, Ian, basically. It's really bad feed burner. Basically, there's a 512k limit on feeds. And after that, it still updates them. It still looks like it's working, but it just freezes. Google basically bought FeedBurner 5 years ago and did hee-haw with them. And they're now basically deprecating a whole lot of features around it as well. I think we will be moving off FeedBurner.
Shame, because it was a good service in its day.
Yeah, and in some ways it still is. But I don't care about stats and who's doing it. It's just it always, for me, had the flexibility that if we changed the feed underneath or changed the site in any way, I didn't have to go updating everywhere else and people could still get the content, and it took away that worry.
Yep.
There's other ways of doing it. It's a bit of pain in moving, that's all. And I'd rather not if we can avoid it. But then at the same time, I can just see Google turning around and saying, see, in 3 months' time, it's gone. And we need to do it anyway. So we'll probably take the hit and make a move. So thank you, Ro, and apologies if A, you've missed a podcast, and B, you've suddenly got 5 episodes to catch up on. Last week's was particularly poor, so if you've got that in your queue, I would just skip it, to be honest. This week's is far better quality. If you want to find out more about us, we're on digitallightbox.com. Email us info@digitallightbox.com. That's what Ro did, and it worked a treat. And we're on Twitter as Digital Outbox and Skype as well. Henry.
Yeah, I'm Talk Rhubarb on Twitter.
I am Shreeper on Twitter, iandickonapp.net, and my blog is iand.net. Thanks for tuning in, and join us again soon. Goodbye now.
Bye-bye.
I don't know why I kind of went the actors at the end. It's a whole bit strange.
Rumpty tumpty tumpty tum. I do. Rumpty tumpty tum tum.
It's funny.
You're a closet Radio 4 lover. That's clearly what it is.
It's bizarre.
At least I'm right out there and upfront about it.
Well, the nice thing, see when I listen back, see when I'm doing the edit, you're quite consistent throughout. Chris is quite consistent throughout. And I range from total scum Glaswegian to a little bit of posh Billy Connolly type when he's trying to be an arse to like, then I'll go goodbye now, and you're like, what goodbye are you now doing?
You're like Barbie in Toy Story. Bye bye now. Bye bye.
Thanks for that.